I'm completely different than other Irish people on that point.
Mm-hmm.
I completely embrace anyone that feels Irish, even if they grew up in the UK. And similarly, Irish Americans, because if I had children here, I would be telling them they're Irish, right?
Yeah.
And I would be imbuing that with them, and they would grow up with a London accent. All right, mate. And they'd be like, yeah, my dad's from Kilkenny, so I feel Irish.
No, if they live in West London, they can't avoid that.
right. If they live in West London, they can be like, my father is Irish, and he's very, very agricultural.
Hello, welcome to Comedy with an Accent podcast. I'm your Taiwanese comedian, Quan Wen. I interview comedians who perform English stand-up comedy but who are not native English speakers, or they can have a very distinct British regional accent. This podcast is all about comedy, about accent, about languages, and about the comedy technique. So stay tuned if you're interested.
So are we started?
Not fully. I do the whole thing that Mitorio makes fun of.
Yeah.
Because you guys like to ease into a conversation. I don't.
Yeah.
I do it like a radio show, so.
Yeah, do it. I'm old-fashioned. That's great.
Hello, welcome back to another episode of Comedy with an Accent podcast. Today, I'm very excited ever Irish comedian, a month after the first Irish comedian. It's like someone branded themselves as the eternal virgin, but once they do it, they just keep doing it.
Right.
Like a deluge. So
yes.
I'm going to welcome our guest today. That is Mike Rice.
Hello.
Hello. Mike Rice from County Kilkenny or just from Kilkenny?
County Kilkenny.
That's more correct, right? Because you're a farmer's boy. So
yeah. You
shouldn't really be from Kilkenny, but you're from the surroundings of Kilkenny.
That's right. So Kilkenny is a county in Ireland, but then also the main town. So that it's actually technically a city in Ireland, but it's not really a city. It's a town.
Did you just call it a city? I was there last year.
No. This is what I'm telling you. I know it's a town, but it's technically called a city for whatever reason. It used to be the capital of Ireland. Yeah, so I grew up about 2 or 3 miles outside the town of Kilkenny on a dairy farm. Yeah.
So are the Kilkenny town folks kind? Do they look down on you because you are 2-3 miles from the actual town centre?
No, I don't think so, because Ireland is so agricultural, you know, like it less so now than it was, but it used to be just, I think, 80% farmers in Ireland or something years ago. Now it's a lot less. So being a farmer is like such a regular thing in Ireland.
Okay. Yeah. I probably went in a bit too deep too quickly. Let me introduce. No, I don't actually think I need to introduce you, but I do think.
Do.
People who listen to this podcast are very different from your following. I may be judging, but I'm really glad that I don't know Mike really well, but he's always been a very polite, friendly colleague to me. And when he does his comedy on stage, I'm just glad I'm not the one he's making fun. Mike is a super nice gentleman. I had the pleasure of inviting him to headline my show when I was still running Comedy with Maxon. I think it was 2 years ago.
That's right.
So, yeah. Mike, now London-based, used to gig in his native Ireland. He was twice on the Irish National TV RTE.
That's
and
right.
I have to say Irish National TV. I just say RTE. No one knows here.
Sorry. Of course. I accept that. No one gives a shit.
No. There are so many Irish British, so they'll give a shit. Mike was nominated in 2022 for a BBC Comedy Award, and also in 2023, the inaugural Sean Locke Comedy Award. Can
That's
I just
right.
say he was my fellow nominee? We were both.
Yeah.
Yes, we were both losers at this competition. And I do apologize because in my podcast intro, I say I will introduce comedian whose native language is not English or people with very distinct British accent. So I just want to clarify, I do not think Ireland is part of Britain. Irish accent is not a British accent, one of the British accent.
Yeah.
But as I said last time when I interviewed Peter Flanagan,
yes.
Irish comedians are almost a genre on the UK comedy circuit.
They are, I think they are, yeah.
Yes. So I said last time when I tried to pick a guest from this group or pool of Irish comedian, I need to make a specific point. And before I get into that, I want to ask you my standard question.
Yes.
So Mikey, do you think when you speak English, you have an accent?
Yeah.
Elaborate, what's your accent?
Well, the Irish accent is, you're made very aware of it. So I started doing comedy really in Chicago in 2015. I moved there and lived there for 2 years. So when you're there, you're completely aware you have an accent because everyone just said, oh my God, your accent is amazing, man. You're Irish, right? And then you're like, you say 33, right? You don't pronounce your THs, man? And then you're like, yeah, that's correct. But it kind of just makes you feel special in a way because you're just different. Before I'd gone there, when I was just growing up in Ireland, I don't think I particularly liked my accent. You just don't think about it because you're surrounded by people who talk like you, right?
So but let's say in Ireland, is your accent perceived by some Irish people as a different accent?
Yes, because if I was to talk normally like I would to Irish people that are from where I'm from, it would be quite rural. I don't know if you would say agricultural. Like even now when I'm over here, like I speak a little differently because, you know, I'm trying to be understood all the time. Whereas if I was to speak like I did when I was young, it would be quicker and a lot more slang and
more swearing.
Yeah, and Catholic kind of Jesus, sure, I told you one there was Abby God and that fellow was
like a Mary Mother of God.
Jesus, Mary Mother of God.
That's one aspect I don't know if you know a comic called Cahill.
I do know Cahill.
Because
like
Cahill, sometimes when I read his comment on Facebook, he will always have like Lord Jesus.
That's right.
I always find it funny, but I never managed to use it because for me, it comes quite unnaturally. I think it looks too deliberate when I try to incorporate, but that's just so funny. That's so funny.
Well, it's a very Catholic hangover within all our speech. I don't know if you'd say it's kind of taking the Lord's name in vain, we'll say, but like just constantly, oh, Jesus Christ, Jesus, Mary and Joseph. So it's just this constant referencing Jesus and Mary and the Lord and all this stuff. And it's all done in this kind of almost shameful, you know, life is hard and oh God, Mother of Jesus.
But is it a spectrum? Because I listened to what you said on other podcasts before. You describe your mother is so quintessentially conservative Catholic.
Like yes.
If you mention the word sex around her, she'll be very unhappy.
She'd be incredibly.
And she's not a fan of your style of comedy. Let's put it that way.
No,
you have this mother and the relatives, like the cousin from your mother's side, actively disapprove your comedy content, right? But what if other Irish people didn't grow up with such a conservative family or parents? Do they engage in similar amount of religious terminology?
I think so, because I think it's just cultural in Ireland as opposed to directly connected to being religious. I just think it's like part of the parlance of the people and the country. It's just how we talk.
How could you be rural? You just use the word parlance.
Well,
so effortless.
I'm trying to be fancy and educated and seem erudite on this podcast.
You don't have to be trying to be. You are. I will prove how and why. But let's continue because I find it very interesting. I didn't touch upon this religious aspect with Peter last time because Peter is a very political comedian. He writes for the Irish Times. So we were all about the troubles, the misery, the colonization.
Yes.
But I think this is fascinating. I always had a vague idea how pompous Catholicism is compared to the Protestants. But I never know the magnitude of this until 2 weeks ago. I visited Florence and Rome. Rome is
insane. I'm going in June, by the way.
Oh my God, you're going to be burned. Rome will be so hot in June. Everywhere I go, because my friends and I were like, after we queue for the Vatican City and Colosseum, I was like, I had enough of this endless queue. Let's just go visit some random churches. So I didn't expect their churches are like the corner shop. Or maybe it shouldn't be church, it should be cathedral. Not cathedral, it's called basilica.
Yeah.
Basilica, I'm getting too nerdy here. So a basilica would be a Catholic church that's built on the old pagan temple quite often during the Roman time. They have a specific name. Their churches, every single one of that, it just exquisite inside.
Yeah, well, so I'm bringing my mother in June. I'm bringing her to, she loves the opera. Like my mother's very like, very kind of proper woman. You know, she loves classical music, the opera. She hates bad language and any reference to sex. And she's obsessed with table manners.
And she had 4 sons.
She did. Wild.
Four wild.
Just wild, mentally unwell.
Including Nimnog. Poor her.
And then Nimnog, who's now living with Nimnog, who is my little brother, who has taken over our farm. He used to be obsessed with keys and, yes, did come at me with a knife when I was younger. if you want to see that story, I think I do it on
Have a Word Podcast. Yeah,
Have a Word Podcast. So bring my mother to Florence and Rome because I'm trying to become the favorite son. So
what's your ranking amongst the four?
Three.
Okay, so is there Patrick, Mike, Nimnog and John?
That's right. Right. Yes.
Which placing do you have?
So I'm probably third. I'm three out of four.
Okay.
At the minute. And I used to be, I was probably second before I did comedy. I was probably second. Nearly first, actually. I was almost at the top. My mother really loved me, but then...
Is John the favorite?
John is now the favorite, but John probably went from the bottom to the top by coming out as gay and being then an actor.
No.
Yeah.
Is he single?
John? Yeah. No, he's a boyfriend, Shaq.
Oh, God, because literally before the recording, I just listened to an episode of he chatting with his brother John on his old podcast.
Oh, yeah.
And then I Google his brother John. God, what a gorgeous Irishman.
John's
he had like
gorgeous.
A tenor voice, but I didn't know. I just thought it's one of those straight people I cannot fancy. You right. shouldn't have told me, your little brother.
Oh, yeah. John's gay, yeah. So John is...
an actor.
And he's an actor, yeah. And so he is a boyfriend... Shaq, who's a lovely guy. I was just with them last week. But so John, when he came out, John had been very misbehaved in school. So was I. Really bad student. And not bad student. I would study hard, but I was so misbehaved. I was suspended a lot.
Do you pull pranks?
No, not even pranks. Well, I did prank my vice principal once. Yeah. So we called him and I got called into the police station for that one.
What did you do? Do not ignore the details. So, vice principal.
So vice principal, I was in... Andorra, actually, on this ski trip with my... It wasn't actually even with my school. It was run by a teacher who used to work in our school, but now no longer did. And he was a really nice man, but a fairly severe alcoholic. But he...
They just being Irish.
That's being Irish, I guess. Now, that's the first real racist thing you've said, but...
based on facts,
which
half an Irish comedian would do.
Oh, absolutely. Sorry. No, I'm joking. I don't care. So he brought us Andorra, but it was outside the school. So I don't know how our parents let us go. It was crazy because it was a complete lawless trip. Everyone that was on the trip, there was fourth years and fifth years. So 16-year-olds and 17-year-olds. And everyone like got weapons. Everyone was drunk as f- every night. There was like insane bullying going on.
Did you say everyone was drunk as f- or
drunk
they
as f- yeah.
But something, not like everyone was drunk and they f- So no. I just need to be
no one
not like a homoerotic trip to Andorra.
No, not as far as I know, but who knows what could have happened.
I keep distracting you. I'm sorry.
That's
so
right.
On this lawless trip in Andorra.
Yeah. So Andorra, there was my year and my friends, and then there was people a year older than us, and they kind of terrorized us with like pepper spray and like pellet guns and I got my eyebrows shaved off. They...
During your sleep or...
No. They just held me down. And then... Because it was my birthday when I was over there and they decided that was a very punishable...
I thought Catholicism was trying to teach people to be a better person. What's going on?
I know. I don't think this was necessarily officially under the branch of the Catholic Church, what was happening. But then they held me down another time and they tried to shave gay into my head.
What is gay in?
Just gay. They tried to shave the words gay.
Oh, I thought you were talking about like a hairstyle.
No. Just types of gay. Very homophobic time, I think. When I'm thinking the mid-2000s, our teen years, you know, that was everything. It was just, you're gay. You know what I mean?
Yeah, as a gay man, I would argue that has never gone away.
Really?
Yeah, because...
With younger people, you think?
Well, not the younger people, but with the comedians. Because quite often, a straight male comedian being called, are you gay? Is still a punchline. I mean, it's not vicious, but it's still quite prevalent.
What do you think, what's your feeling on that when you hear people use the word, like, if they say, oh, that's gay, or something as a bit of a negative or something?
I think a bit of eye-rolling, but I wouldn't immediately say, I don't want to follow this. I think I would keep watching, observing a few gags to see. For example, you are a boundary-pushing comedian.
Right.
And watching your special, I will be laughing and feel like I have a heart attack sometime. But you always manage to get away with it.
Right.
But some people don't. Like, some people immediately switch. We can come to this later, but basically, there's one joke I really hate when straight male comic do it.
Okay.
They would say, if I had to suck a cock.
Okay.
And I feel if you actually never really fancy sucking a cock, Yes. You know, people like me who really like sucking a cup, but just to hide that feeling, it still sometimes gets me into trouble. It's not like you don't have the right to say it, but when you say it, I kind of mock you down in my... Well, you don't really mean it. I know sexuality is a spectrum. And actually, in the LGBT world, there's a big debate about how gay people bully bisexual people. Because gay people just refuse to believe bisexuality exists. And do not laugh, you have a joke about that, because you're like...
Which one?
Pika Lane. I don't remember.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, see? See? Oh, so I wouldn't... Anything I say today will be based on facts, right?
That's right. I know, I say, I think I say, pick a side, you coward. But to me, like, that's just... purely,
it's just a joke.
That's just a joke.
It's in the arena of you say things you don't fully believe in.
Oh yeah, and also I think the reason that's funny to me is because of how regressive it is, because of how stupid it is.
Yeah.
But I was just I am interested in, because, like I said, my little brother is gay, John. But I would, like, for example, because John is gay, and I know it was difficult for him to come out. And he came out, I think, 8 years after he knew, right? Oh. So he was planning on never telling anyone. That was his whole plan, you know. And like I said, when we were growing up, it's quite a homophobic environment. Rural Catholic Ireland in the 2000s, you know what I mean? Not an easy place. I'm not saying it's easy now either. But because of that, I don't like to use... Yeah, like, I'd be very, myself, sensitive to use the words, oh, like, that's gay or something like that, because I would hate for my brother to hear me say that.
Yes.
And I would think that, even though I know some, I have friends of mine who are gay who say things like that, and they'll just be like, that's gay, and they're gay, and they don't care. They're just whatever. But still, I would personally, I'd feel, guilt is not the word, but I'd be like sensitive to the fact that to put that word as a negative on things mustn't be nice for some people to hear.
Right. I'm going to keep track of, there were two traits. So initially we were talking about the ranking of four brother and who's a favorite. And that's why we got into the John being the favorite now, but we also didn't finish your Andorra school trip properly.
Oh yes. Good interviewing.
Yeah. But let me get to this, because I've always liked you as a person, and I always respect you as a comedian, but there was initially a bit of hesitation, so how do I interview Mike? And due to the amount of, like, research and the podcast I've listened to, I finally realized that you don't do it much yourself, but quite often you will be around comedians on the same show as you or on podcasts where people around you will say things like, you're just gay, being the punchline. So you don't participate in saying those lines yourself, but at your show, some people may be inclined. I mean, they're not automatically vicious.
At my stand-up shows?
No, not necessarily your stand-up show. It's like, for example...
No, Vittorio will say it sometimes. I mean, like, he will just say, that's gay.
That's what I meant. Right. I didn't want to say it.
No, that's okay. That's fine. But we've had discussions on the pod where I've said...
Because I feel... Yeah, actually, I remember...
I don't like that.
You were the kind of the reason. There was one episode, you guys were talking about traveling the world in 800 days, and he did, like, a Japanese accent, and you immediately said, have you gone a bit too far?
Oh, yeah, and do you know what, though? The thing is, I've done it, and I've been the person who's done accents. I do all accents.
Yes.
And then I'll feel bad after and be like, I'm going to stop doing that, or I should stop doing it. But then sometimes if I'm getting carried away, if anyone says anything to me, like if you said to me, hey, I didn't like that, I'd just be, sorry, I've got to stop doing that. So I'm not trying to be an edgelord be whatever.
But if people who don't pay attention, if they only quickly go over one or two of your clips, they may not get the idea. So for example, in your special, Nasty Character, there was one bit you imitated an Indian accent.
Yeah.
But the context kind of require that accent.
Absolutely.
And you keep elaborating on this. And people initially, if they think like, why are you as a straight white man doing an Indian accent, you're obviously punching down. But the more you listen to that joke, actually that accent was spot on, and it gives so much texture to the whole joke. So my question is here, you must face constant debate with yourself. Where is the line and what to do it? Because people perceive you as a confident comedy performer, and you're what comedians respect as the comedian's comedian. But at the same time, you are not afraid of showing your vulnerability. You admit on stage you have mental health issue, you had depression, you try to do meditation, all the things that an actual alpha would try to hide.
Yes, right.
But you were born in a surrounding that required very toxic masculinity. So you can put on this coat if you need to. Your life has always been how much you're allowed yourself out. And if you had to put down the defense to deal with the rural Irish folks, you can. Like saying, Mike, you piece of shit. Yeah, I'm going to you, my. So you can do that language.
Yeah.
So you are constantly moving on both ends. But you grew up with this personality, but armed with something different because of your upbringing. Yeah. And that's why I say you're constantly having this debate with yourself.
Yes. So that's very good interviewing, Quan. So say, I think we're comedy in general. The thing is, I want to make people happy. You know what I mean? I want people to have a great time. I'm not someone who's just like, if you don't like it, then, you know, you. This is comedy. It's like, that's just not my energy where I'm coming from. I'm trying to be as funny as I can. I enjoy dark humor and I enjoy doing characters and different things. So that life bit, for example, I used to do that and it would always do really well. And then someone like a comedian or something commented to me once or they in Ireland and was like, gave me a bit of shit about it. And was like, well, you're doing this Indian accent. I was like, yeah, but he's not the butt of the joke.
He's not.
Like the whole bit is completely positive and about how I want to be more like him. And there's a, yes, I think, a real transcendent beauty to the message, you know.
The Indian person you mimic become the celebration.
Absolutely.
Of a happy energy.
Completely.
Yeah.
And an energy that I want to have and be. And I don't want to make that person who is a real person in real life a different person so that some people will feel less comfortable. But any of my Indian friends, like a girl, Abby Mohanty, who's in Berlin, they love the bit.
Yeah.
Love it. And that makes them feel seen and they're being included also.
Anyone who has ever raised doubt about that joke, do they tend to be white?
Of course. Of course.
Millennial white?
Of course.
To keep people the contact, the joke's about at a anti-abortion rally.
Yeah.
And so the pro-lifer, they were just chanting life. And this, the clueless Indian, maybe tourist or passerby, thought all they were doing something positive. They were just like, yeah, life. And, life. And you start to do the accent. And because we are so not used to, if you're not from South Asia, doing the accent can be considered racist. But the whole point is about what's your intention and who is the butt of the joke.
That's
and pretty soon after two or three examples, the initial discomfort melts away because you realize that he's not the butt of the joke. The whole awkwardness and funny setup is part of a joke. And later you were celebrating him. And you also commented on the audience, you guys are feeling uncomfortable,
right?
Yeah. So you kind of just want to address it and take them on board along with you.
Yeah. And I want to come from the point here as well, like, I'm no angel. I have said, and when you do like 2 hours of podcasting a week, and there was a time I was doing 4 hours a week and five even because I do my own, you say things that are like, if you played me back a lot of stuff and you'd be like,
yeah,
do you think this is okay? I'd be like, no, actually, I don't. I'm sorry I did that.
Mm.
I was in the moment. I was just trying to be funny. You know, I'll often say the wrong thing. I'm sure if someone wanted to go through the archives of my podcast, they could take stuff out of context and really make me look terrible. But I'm never trying to be like, like with my bits or anything, my intention is never to be mean or never to be like shitting on people below me, or to, if I am taking shots of people, obviously it's like all of us to some degree, maybe not all of us, but you want to be punching up.
But you are, how to say that, you are merciless, that everyone can be the butt of your joke, and that in itself is fairness,
right? And everyone can be the butt, and mainly myself. You know,
have you counted how many accents you did in your first special? I think at least 5 to 6.
Yeah, I mean, I love doing act outs. I love telling stories that way, true characters.
Yeah. Mike's doing a lot of very great Trump impressions.
So yes,
please
that's
go on Instagram to find those.
Yeah.
But my favorite of the accent you do is the Essex. I don't know how to describe those excess women on the flight
on
in
the
your
flight,
first special.
Yeah.
And,
nah, yeah,
and
talking like that.
And the middle class Irish women who went to watch Vittorio's show translation that come to your show and start describing, but Vittorio went to watch your play, but your show seemed a bit more crass. That accent, I can smell the uptight.
And do you know what's funny? If you told me to do it now, I couldn't.
It was in the moment.
Yeah,
you were in
the moment.
Pure.
Like, I always loved when I was younger there's comedy movies, comedy acting, people doing characters. And I always loved doing accents. Like when I was younger, I'd be doing German accents and just around. I just thought that was really funny. Still to this day, in a childish way.
One of the most difficult episodes to edit because we never finish any conversation we started. Let's come back. Okay, let's come back to the Andorra story.
Okay, so the Andorra story, to finish it, we were on this ski trip. We're 15, 16, 17 year olds. We have unlimited access to alcohol and weapons. Mm-hmm. The older guys within the group are using these weapons to kind of instill some sort of authoritarian control and like just terrorize the younger people, which I was one of. So I had my eyebrows shaved off, a guy tried to shave gay into my head. But then one night we realized we had the phone number of the vice principal of the school, and I wanted to be cool and kind of ingratiate myself to the older fellas.
You want to impress your bulliers.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah, my captives are my captors. So I was like, you can use my phone to prank the vice principal. So we called him. He didn't answer, but a voicemail came up and we left a voicemail being like, you stupid, you smelly bastard, I'm gonna your the worst things you can think of, you know. And we just left it on the voicing. I didn't think of it again. And then a month later, I got a call on my phone and I didn't know the number. So I answered the call. The person on the other end is like, oh, hi, I'm just after finding a phone and your number was one of the first numbers on the phone. So I just want to give it back to its owner. Can you tell me who owns this phone? And I was like, I don't know. Nothing came up for me. And he's like, oh, that's okay. What's your name, by the way? And I was like, oh, Michael Rice. And he's like, oh, okay. Where do you live? I was like, Greenridge. Can I give him that? He goes, okay, thank you. Hangs up. I was like, was that?
Oh, I was a police officer.
I was a police officer, yeah. And then I get a call from my mother. She's like, the police just called. They're like, they want you to come in on Monday. But basically, I had two police officers sit me down in an interrogation room and play me the recording of you.
And your mom was outside listening to that.
She was outside. And so they played me this and I just start crying. But then they were like, this from your phone. But then I just said, I don't know, I was drunk. I just kept denying everything. I can't remember. They're like, you did this. You have to say who else was involved, all this stuff. And I was like, I don't know. I was just bawling. I was a funny one. I was a rebellious teenager who would always get in trouble, but was also very fragile and sensitive. So every time I got in trouble, I would also start crying. I didn't do anything. It's this constant cycle of trespass. And then just floods of remorse. So then I got brought into my school and my principal sat me down and was like, you need to say who else was involved or you're getting expelled.
And did you rat them out?
No, I didn't. But I came to some of them and I was like, if you guys don't own up to this, I'm going to get expelled. And I said to a good few of them, and then most of them didn't help me. But two of the guys then owned up and that saved me from getting expelled.
Do you know that reinforced the theory I had? You're basically Al Pacino in Godfather 1 that was born into that environment.
Yeah.
You are a sensitive soul, but you had to toughen up.
Right. But hopefully I don't become...
I'm not trying to analyze you.
Please do. But hopefully, unlike Michael Corleone, I do not become a
full-blooded murderer
who kills my brother.
You have enough agency, but you were kind of forced to become a certain part of you had to become that person to survive.
Well, also, I think we all contain multitudes and different sides of ourselves. Like, there is a side of me that is super competitive, loves sports, played sports, was crazy. If I play sports even now, I'm insane. The level I want to win.
Yeah, but the guy in Glee.
Right. Which guy?
Finn. The guy was like the American football team captain.
Did he kill someone, that actor?
I think he died.
Did he die? Oh, he died.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the character.
Yeah.
Because in Glee, he resists to join a Glee club because these are for the misfits.
Yes.
Singing is so gay.
That's right.
And he was the most popular can be, a football team captain. In a small town America, that's a big thing, right?
Yes.
But eventually he embraced his artistic creative side.
Yes, that's a great comparison because when I was in school, like that, because I don't want to make out I'm all one thing or the other. I was a sensitive person. I never really felt I could express the fact that
you wanted to act.
Yeah, and I wanted to act, and I wanted to do theater, and or not even theater. It was more movies. I wanted to do it in my childish brain. I wanted to be into movies, but I wanted to be in that world. And I loved movies. I loved comedy movies. I could always come up with stuff in my head that I thought was funny, but there was no avenue for it. There's nowhere to put it. But then I had my friends who all played sport and drank and did all this stuff. And I didn't want to do anything that would risk me being popular with these people. And it wasn't until I got into my early 20s and realized these people aren't going to be around.
In what way? Are you going to go on separate journeys in your lives? Or what do you mean by that?
Well,
or they would drink so much they would die prematurely compared to you.
My probably 17 to 22 or 23, I can't remember a lot of it. I drank so much. It was crazy. But I was also drinking to just block out how unhappy I was, I think. But no, what I mean by they're not going to be here forever, I don't mean they're going to go away. They're still my friends. I have a wedding this weekend and I love them. In my mind, I perceived that if I do something different on some level, then they won't be my friends anymore, which was just not true. That was just all in my head.
Yeah.
No one gives a shit, really.
Maybe no adults give a shit. I think for kids,
right.
The kids' world is much smaller and you have to show sort of 100% of loyalty be in certain tribe to...
That's right. That's true. So I think when I was in my early 20s, at some point I was like, they're going to go get girlfriends, go move, get jobs. They're not going to be around in my immediate life. So I can't make decisions for other people. I got to go
your own way.
I got to go do what I want to do for myself. And also I was so depressed in my early 20s, just riddled with anxiety. It didn't help that I was binge drinking all the time. You know, I couldn't go a second of the day without... My existence seemed like torturous at that time. And it got to a point where I feel I was so low and depressed that I just didn't care anymore. I had done a degree in finance, which I hated. I didn't feel any much connection with the people, the subject. I was like, is this going to be my life? Like, for what? I also, like, at that point, had never had any real girlfriend. I was not good with the romantic side of things. I would get panic attacks if I was alone with the girl, you know. I got to a place of being so low, I was completely free. Because I was like, I might as well just live life like a video game and just do whatever the f*** I want to do.
So your courage of giving comedy a go is because you rock bottomed?
Yeah, I think so. That gave me the freedom to just be like, none of it matters anyway. I have nothing to lose. I hate my life. And I had hit puberty very late as well. I hit puberty at like 16, 17, which was traumatic by itself. So in my early 20s were almost like still in my teen years, I think, in terms of angst and really not understanding my place in the world and stuff. So yeah, the rock bottom, I'm very grateful for that now. The pain I felt in those years allowed me to get to a place where I felt free enough to go do something crazy.
Okay. You have a very mature and soft-skated side of you. You don't put on public display a lot, but you've been through all that shit.
Yes.
So life is not jokes for you. Your jokes come from a true place.
Oh, thank you, man.
It's very fashionable to talk about therapy and depression for a lot of comedians.
Right.
A lot of people talk about that because it's trendy and fashionable, or they just run out of material. But when you talk about it, there's an almost American brutal reality to it.
Yes.
You listen to it, it's funny, but you also feel kind of sad or sympathy for you. It's like, is that really how extreme has got for you? On your comedy special, a common comment I find is people say, oh my God, the podcast mic is exactly the stage mic. I think you're one of the guests I've interviewed. You have such a aligned and similar stage persona. Most of the time people have an exaggerated persona on stage. I think you're almost identical because the way you are very full on. You're so full on that your shirt was all wet in a sec.
Yeah, it's drowned by the end. It's disgraceful.
It could be general British venues or lack of air conditioning to start with, but it's so committed. Like, you don't just put on a show. You are digging so much out. And I just want to say, normally, I don't run this podcast as a trauma porn. I don't normally run it as a therapy session, but I couldn't control where my... Yeah. I was so afraid of breathing when you were accounting for your podcast.
Well, no, I don't know why. I don't know what led me into.
And then the other thing I found is that normally I listen to as much podcasts my guests have been on before I interview them. You have such a presence online. I gave up. I was like, in the past, Mike has his own podcast, the Mike Wright Show, from 2020 to roughly August 21. And then he did three more episodes in 22. He used to be on Big Mike and the Cheap podcast until April last year.
Yes.
And then you went primary on Mike and Vittorio's Guide to Parenting.
Yes.
But you are the go-to person when Adam has gone elsewhere. So you have featured in Have a Word podcast 5 times at least.
Yeah, I think publicly maybe 5 times. And then I've done a lot of their Patreon stuff as well.
Oh, yeah, because so, I didn't pay to join.
Right. But they've been very kind to me. Yeah.
People would kill to get on Have the Word just once. You'll be invited back and sit in as a replacement.
Right.
I want to come to this point that you may be from Ireland for whatever reason. Maybe it's a general Irish thing, but you in particular have never been seen as an outsider.
You mean, are you asking me have I, or are you saying your opinion is?
It's my opinion. People make remark of your Irish accent, and your accent is quite strong when it comes to the T. You know?
Yeah.
You don't say month, you say munt.
Yeah.
You say, you don't say three, you say tree.
Tree, that's right.
So when you turn on the automated captions on YouTube, you'll realize that mic three will always be transcripted as tree.
As tree, yeah.
Yeah. And you have such a distinct, strong Irish. It's not just an Irish accent. It's a rural, country folk Irish accent.
That's right.
You have tons of the tags, as I mentioned to you once. I don't normally mimic my guests, but I couldn't help. But this is so charming. Like, if you watch Mike's special, he says a lot, you know.
Yeah.
And once I bumped into another Irish comic in Lisbon, John O'Keefe.
Yeah.
He said, you know. And I mentioned to him, oh, you sound very much like another comic I know from London, Mike. I said, yeah, because we are both country folks.
That's right. That's where we're both from farms,
yeah.
Me and John.
So you have such a distinct accent, yet British people don't really other you. I know Irish and British have a thing, but still sometimes there's a distance they keep from Irish comedian, but not you. You are accepted.
I don't know necessarily. Maybe by other comedians.
Yeah.
As in...
Are you saying that with audience is still a
no,
thing?
No, I think audiences as well are... I found a British audience is completely fine, but then I think that Irish people are very familiar to British people.
Mm.
Like the amount of emigration that's come from Ireland to the UK has been relentless for 150 years.
I agree,
you know?
I feel at least when I'm watching, maybe I'm wrong, you are seen as one of us by the British people. And some Irish comics don't get into that category of closeness.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that's something you see then.
I think it's because you're so charming and you're so relatable and so committed, and people jump into the relatability of your performances and that transcends and they forgot about your Irish accent. They forgot about your Irish accent, despite your accent being so strong.
Right. You know what? It's funny because when I was younger, I wanted to get away from my Irishness, you know.
Oh.
When I was in America, I remember I resented Irishness. I felt Irishness, I was oppressed by it somehow when I lived there, and I couldn't be myself. Like we were saying, I couldn't be open and maybe as sensitive as I wanted to be and talk about all the things. Because I want to be able to just talk about all the things that are hard in life, because that gives me relief. And I never felt I could in Ireland. And then I kind of saw Irishness as this kind of oppressive culture or something. So when I was in America, I think after 2 years, I almost lost my accent.
Oh.
You know, I was...
Is it subconscious or is it deliberate?
I think deliberate almost. I think I wasn't like, I'm going to try to lose my accent, but I think I was like, oh, I love American comedy. And I had these new American friends that I thought, oh, these people really get me. And I just, you know, I just started saying dude a lot and man, it's amazing, man, or whatever. And now I find myself really going back towards my Irishness and how I was brought up. And because I think I always felt as well, I grew up a farmer. I used to play sports in town clubs and you'd always smell like cow shit because you were covered in And there's not enough, you couldn't wash yourself enough. Mm. You'd still smell bad because you're working on the farm all the time. Mm. So from the time I was like 5 to 18, basically, you're a worker on the farm. I think I felt an inferiority complex to people or something. I think I felt like I was, I don't know, either weird or a loser or I don't know what kind of idea I had of myself that was attached to my upbringing and the way we talked and the agriculturalness of it all. So I think I just kind of wanted to get away from it. Whereas now I look back and I'm so grateful of how I grew up and the turns of phrase my father has and the way we talk. And because it's unique, it's lyrical and there's a poetry to it and all this stuff that I just didn't have any appreciation for when I was younger. Now I'm like, oh, that's a flavor. Like, do you know what I mean? That's,
yeah,
that gives things character and color.
And that and makes who you are. But
that's right.
Because if you want to be the authentic version, then you have to explain where all this comes from.
That's right.
Your father was 90% misery.
Yeah. More misery than man, as I always say. Yeah. So if you looked at a clip of me from 8 years ago, I'm a lot more Irish now in how I do everything.
So you started comedy in 2015. 8 years ago, where would have you been performing?
Probably in America, or I would have maybe just come back to Ireland. But because I'd been in America for a few years,
but
I learned.
Could it also be that in America, the idea of Ireland is more of a caricature?
Absolutely.
You're more fetishized.
That's right.
Whereas you can still be the Irish person with a bit of nuance in the UK. Right?
100%.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I can still use my turns of phrase here. People kind of understand when I'm doing those little things between bits where I'm like, I'm a nasty little man, I'm a rock, which is very Irish self-flagellation. You know what I mean? It's like, say something terrible. It's like when I was talking about when I was young, I would trespass or misbehave and then immediately filled with remorse and I'm crying. And that's like on stage, I say something terrible and then I'm immediately like, I should have been drowned at birth.
So there's one joke I don't get in the comment section. You say that your father's relationship with the wind, and that person says it's so accurate if you understand farming and being a farmer in Ireland. What does that mean?
Well, it's a line in one of my bits and I believe it's in the context of, he would know if I told another man that I love him. He'd be like, something gay is going on, you know, and the wind would tell him that.
Oh.
You know, that's in the context of the bit. I think if you grew up on a farm in Ireland, the weather is so bad and you're spending all your time outside and it's cold and there's shit and rain and wind. Just wind is a massive part of your existence.
Oh, I see.
And you're quite solitary as a farmer. So like my father is out on his own a lot in this weather conditions and he's outside and he's brave in these conditions. So like he's almost closer to the wind than he is to other people.
You see, I have to delete so much from today's talk, but this bit is going to be so poetic. Explain why Mike Rice is Mike, because Michael Rice is his father's name. I do think Mike too want to keep some distance.
That's right. Yeah. What are you cutting out? What needs to be cut out?
I don't know. I had to have to rearrange because, for example, the Andorra trip was a sort of wild apart.
I know. Yeah. I will say, though, it is a pleasure to be interviewed by someone who's actually done research. That's like...
Is that a backstabbing at a lot of it?
No. I just think it's just, even like when you do radio stuff I've done before, it's like they'll have done a little scan and they'll try to play it off like they know who you are.
Because I will be asking questions that are so sort of intrusive and personal. Yeah. I think I owe it to you. And also, I only invite people that I'm intellectually curious about.
Right.
I do want to understand. I don't want to make it too cringe, but let's do the question that I would find it awkward to ask you in the green room.
Yeah.
Well, two microphones in front of us suddenly doesn't become quite as awkward.
That's good.
So, you say that British audience actually know you quite well. We say that for American, you can be perceived as a bit of caricature.
Yeah.
But for Irish people, it's not the Irish, it's your country folk speaking that stands out, right? Is there any other different type of demographic you find that the accent builds you a different gap or image in their mind, apart from the three places you performed? I know you've been to the continental European cities to perform before as well. Or is it between that bigger and smaller English town city, is there a difference for you?
You know, in England, it's interesting, you, especially like in somewhere like London or the more cosmopolitan areas. You know, being Irish is definitely an advantage, I think, now mm-hmm. because, and it's a lovely place to be in general, because, of course, we get the privilege of being white and everything. And then on top of that, but we didn't do anything wrong. We were colonized.
Yeah.
We were oppressed. So we have the white thing without the guilt of like that we over.
So you had a liberty of punching up.
Yeah, so that's absolutely right. And you get kind of added benefit of, I guess, appearing to be the underdog in some sense, you know, because of historically the context.
Yeah.
But then again, it's not that long that it's been good to be Irish. You know, even in the 70s and 80s, Irish people that lived in Britain will tell you there'd be all these jokes about how stupid Irish people are and just being paddy and being this, that and the other. And there's some parts of England where if you play, you can feel it's not as big an advantage anymore here. It's not.
You dirty little leprechauns. Yeah, the audacity right. of you.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And they're less warm to the idea of you. But in like European gigs and stuff, I find, but this is probably just because I am Irish and I am myself and I am probably trying to be charming most of the time, I feel very well received most places. Now, if I'm doing European gigs, I will change how I'm doing things a bit.
Because a lot of things that British people understand don't mean that much That's to right. other Europeans,
exactly.
right?
Exactly. And I'm very well aware of that because I lived in Berlin for 6 months, Barcelona for a year. I've toured Europe a lot with mm-hmm. Viktor Petrashkin. And so I understand what references will work, what won't. But the thing is, a good story is a good story everywhere.
Yeah.
If you tell it well. You know,
I agree. But there's one demographic I'm particularly interested in. These are the Irish Americans or Irish British who self-perceive to be an extension of Irish people.
Yeah.
That's a real cringe for people who grew up in Ireland. And how much of those represent the people that come to see you? And what's the interaction you have with them?
I'm completely different than other Irish people on that point.
Mm-hmm.
I completely embrace anyone that feels Irish, even if they grew up in the UK. And similarly, Irish Americans, because if I had children here, I would be telling them they're Irish, right?
Yeah.
And I would be imbuing that with them and they would grow up with a London accent. All right, mate. And they'd be like, yeah, my dad's from Kilkenny, so I feel Irish.
No, if they live in West London, they can't avoid that.
right. If they live in West London, they can be like, my father is Irish and he's very, very agricultural, you know. So I embrace those people. I'm not one of those people who's like, you're not Irish. It's like, well, genetically they are. And at the end of the day, who gives a f***? That's how you feel or you connect with
yeah.
this culture that feels like home to you. Then I say, great, you know. But some Irish people hate it. They're like, say, plastic paddies. They think they're Irish. Why do you care? I just don't.
I want to prove the next point, and there's a good segue. I want to say, due to what you describe your upbringing, you have a sensitive soul. I think you clearly like reading and art.
Mm.
Your comedy special, when you do the sentence, sometimes it's so poetically beautiful because every single word is so easy, but the ideas are so profound, but the joke is so crass at the same time. I don't know. So you were talking about having a girlfriend whose parents were Irish,
yes.
but she was born English. I tried to make sure the words are correct. So you said, she sounds so strange. What? Yes, she feels like home. And why I say this is so beautiful, because every single word in that sentence is so simple, but you use she feels like home.
Yeah.
That has a sexual implication. So instead of saying when she talks, she come across English, but when I f*** her, do you see my point that this
yeah.
is your
yeah.
craft?
Yeah.
You
yeah.
didn't use any pretentious word there.
Yes.
And then you follow with, her mind is wicked, but her blood is clean. Good. And every single word in those two sentences are absolutely simple, sort of intermediate level for English learners.
Right.
Yeah, the idea are so funny without right. any pretension. It just...
Oh, thank you, man. I'm very proud of that one because I just like the language of it. If you can make something funny and lyrical or like pleasing to the ear.
Can you imagine how much the yeah. same idea will be wasted on another lesser, not to say lesser comedian, but who doesn't have the same craft. Simple, beautiful line. But if you really give the thing, Jesus Christ, like the amount of idea you manage to smuggle Right. Within those two lines.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this comes from a guy who used to do rap in Boston in 2011. Mike Rice was Tricky Beats.
Tricky Beats,
yeah. In 2011.
That's my Boston. Rap name, yeah.
Yeah, we are from the East Coast. I'll burn you so bad, you will be like a bad piece of toast.
That's
so
right.
So how could you... Being someone who rhymes with coast with toast to writing those beautiful comedic lines. You're such a man of contrast.
I think I've grown. I think I the only way was up after my East Coast and toast line. I think I only got really into reading after that.
After the Boston stint.
Yeah, I remember I went through a period. I just felt so stupid and uneducated. So I went through and read all like the classics, you know, like... From Dickens to Dostoevsky to F. Scott Fitzgerald, Hemingway, all just, I went back and read all those.
Oh, so you initiated like the literature phase?
Yeah. Because I just felt so stupid and I would hear these books and all these things being referenced all the time. So I was like, I need to start reading. I haven't read anything in my teenage
years. So you pick from the books that people pretend to have read.
That's right.
The top 100.
Yeah. And I read a lot of them.
See, this is why I'm so unhappy when COVID hit and the Art Council in the UK, they gave a lot of funding to the theatres, but almost no comedy clubs got the funding.
Yeah.
Because they just perceive it's something very sort of popular for the mass public.
Yes.
But to do it well, you need that level of art. On the surface, it feels like it's all poos and cocks and vaginas, yeah. But... if you really pay attention to it, there's a lot of consumption of other forms of art that goes into it for a good comedy show, a good comedy routine.
I couldn't agree more.
The very last question.
Yes.
Your trajectory, maybe it's the circumstances, maybe it's your own decision, but you're very much building your own following, man. In a way that on your Instagram grid... Most of the clips come from the podcast you did with Vittorio.
Uh-huh.
Now, your weekly output, you had to produce 2-3 hours of podcast content.
Yeah.
And then the editing was done much by the software.
Oh, yeah. Beep, boop, boop, boop. That's Vittorio. He does that side of things.
Still, I do this like bi-monthly. I found myself overwhelmed. I don't know how you keep up with such level of output. But at the same time, that level of output is crucial because as we discussed, I write a star... Your style didn't go right into the theater industry gatekeepers' taste naturally.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really matter because you have a very loyal following.
Yeah. Now I've got a good following of people, you know, that have found our podcasts and my stand-up and everything. And I can sell tickets in certain places. And that's all I'd ever wanted. You know, my dream had been... this venue in Ireland called Vickers Street.
How big is it?
It's like 1,050.
Mm.
And that was my biggest dream, to one day be able to do that.
Mm.
And I'm doing that on my next tour. That's as far as I ever thought. That's as good as I thought it could possibly go.
Nah, for now. Next you want Rockefeller. But you see merit in doing the extra non-stage work because it gives you
have to.
It's absolutely, yes.
You have to resist that side of things is...
Futile.
Futile.
Yeah.
Completely futile. Yeah. It's like adapt or die. I don't know where I heard that, adapt or die. Isn't that from some movie or something?
Adapt or die.
But... you know, you wouldn't think we're talking about Instagram reels. Think we're talking about the survival of our race.
The reason I end on this question is what I want to say to people who listen to this episode and have not yet followed Mike. Mike has substantial podcast output. And as I mentioned during the course of interview today, it's the same person. He doesn't have a very artificially constructed stage persona. The difference is the thing you see on stage is crafted. It looks conversational, but it's crafted. Yes. So the unfiltered and unalterated version quite often are in the podcast. He occasionally crossed the line. But you can see from the podcast, you'll get to know him. And I think you can enjoy both. You're going to Edinburgh Fringe again with a new show this year. Can you share how to find you? I don't think it's going to help much. You have such a big following. Yeah. But you know what, we might as well. How to find you on social media and when and where will you be performing at this summer?
So if you want to see my stand-up, I've got 2 specials on YouTube. Just write in Mike Rice Comedy. They'll come up. Instagram, Mike Rice Comedy. Follow me there. I'm going to be in Edinburgh all August. I'm going to be going on a tour, UK and Ireland. And I'm going to go to Australia and all around Europe, everywhere. next year. From November 25 on, I'll be on tour and come by, have a look. And yeah, that's it.
If it's not clear, I would include the relevant links in the episode description.
Yes.
We almost exhausted our recording time today. Sorry, I went longer than much
that's
I
all right.
anticipated.
That's all
I
right.
I want to thank again my guest for coming on today. Thank you, Mike, and see you next time. Please like, follow, subscribe, and if not, have a good day. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.